So it goes. Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour. So it goes.
You need some whoop 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 boing, you know?
Absolutely.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am not Kristen Bry. Kristen is off today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in as your guest host today. We've made it through 2 hours of the show. I haven't had our producer have to rush over to the bleep button just yet, so we're doing great. Kristen had some pretty exciting stuff happen today too. She had her content on Instagram, on the As Goes Wisconsin Instagram, shared by one Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That is pretty exciting. She had a great video about the upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So I would encourage everybody to check that out if you're missing Kristen today on your airwaves. And again, if you're unfamiliar with me and my work, my name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. And I'm very excited to introduce our next guest, Justin Warland, who is a Washington, D.C.-based senior correspondent at Time Magazine covering climate change and the intersection of policy, politics, and society. He will be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at a clean energy event at Discovery World in Milwaukee, organized by WIS Politics and WIS Business, which will focus on how federal funding will drive changes in how we heat and cool our homes, how we commute, and how we compete in a worldwide energy market. So, Justin, thank you so much for joining us here on As Goes Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here in Milwaukee, and hoping that we can get Julia Louis-Dreyfus to share this segment.
that'd be pretty exciting, huh? That would certainly give us a bigger audience to talk about these issues. I'm interested. I'm very interested. Glad you are joining our show here today. Interested to learn more about what you have to say about the Inflation Reduction Act and in this speech tomorrow at the WIS Politics event. So what are some of the big picture things that you are planning to discuss?
Yeah, I would say one sort of high level framing when I think about the Inflation Reduction Act and I think about climate change and climate policy more broadly is, you know, the immense challenges and also the immense opportunities, right? So this is a huge deal. It's a lot of money, just $369 billion, just sort of conservatively from the federal government. There's billions and billions more if you start to dig into how some of these line items actually play out. And that money is going to get pumped across the economy, creating opportunities for new jobs, creating opportunities, as you alluded to, for people to retrofit their homes, to do energy efficiency. It's going to change the way that the U.S. plays on the global stage, right? And that's important for geopolitics and sort of, you know, these lofty things about how we trade and how we interact with other countries. But it also means something about, what jobs are in our own backyards, here in Wisconsin or around the country. So lots of opportunity. And then there's challenges, right? There's supply chains that need to be built up. There are, as I was alluding to, geopolitical challenges that come out of that. So I'm going to talk about all of that. I think the key thing, along with that, as I alluded to, is this is something that really matters for our day-to-day lives. And I want people to walk away understanding that and believing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this obviously a huge piece of legislation that was passed by the Democratic majorities in Congress last year, signed by President Biden. It's going to be one of his signature pieces of legislation passed. It was the pieces of the Build Back Better deal, the massive Build Back Better deal. Much of it did not make it into the Inflation Reduction Act, but much of it did. So I think it's really important to take a closer look at these issues because, the name Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, let's be honest, it's not really what this bill is mostly about, and you're talking about a lot of the climate and clean energy components of this. So how does let's bring that home a little bit? How is that going to impact us here in the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think every place across this country has the industries that they've had for years and decades, and all of those are sort of changing, and everybody's sort of touched in different ways. Obviously, the Midwest more broadly, huge home to transport sector, lots of manufacturing jobs still, in the Midwest. And just a few weeks ago, I was in Michigan, where Ford was unveiling a new battery plant, which is, they said would not have happened without the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's opportunities, for the transit sector to sort of bring back some of the jobs that have been lost. To change, places that are that still have those jobs. I mean, Milwaukee here, home of Johnson Controls, energy efficiency is a huge component, or it's an important component of the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's opportunities for companies like Johnson Controls here in Milwaukee to take advantage, and for consumers and businesses that use those technologies to take advantage of that. So there's lots of growth opportunities. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but this is a huge job opportunity for places like Wisconsin.
Yeah, and as Wisconsin kind of, we're in kind of a period of economic flux in this state where we've had, traditionally dominated by the manufacturing sector, but obviously that has been a decline for a couple decades now, at least. And, as Wisconsin kind of tries to figure out its path forward, legislation like this can open up some opportunities for kind of what that next step can be. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say absolutely. And I think, I don't think anybody's saying that the manufacturing sector is going to be what it once was, but there's potential to bring some of the jobs back, particularly given that the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act, to take advantage of the tax incentives requires a North American supply chain, and that's a real incentive for these companies to locate in Wisconsin. I think the big question is, and this sort of remains to be seen, is to what degree do a lot of these companies decide to build facilities here in Wisconsin, or I mentioned Michigan, or do they go to places that are really trying to offer incentives and have sort of easier labor laws than in some places in the Midwest, places like Tennessee, Georgia, they're getting a lot of investment as well. So that's an interesting question to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's I'm always interested to see like these competitions between the states for these types of things. I think we had an interesting example, last year before, something like that, where the federal decision to, build new trucks for the U.S. Postal Service. And that contract ended up, Oshkosh Truck got that contract. And they, instead of building it in Wisconsin, they're ended up building those, starting a new plant in South Carolina to build those. So it's going to be interesting to see if this creates another situation where you have kind of a number of these states with different, labor laws or tax incentives or other requirements, really competing with each other to try and get some of these, take advantage of some of these opportunities with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, absolutely. Very critical question.
All right. So we are talking with Justin Worland. He's with Time Magazine. He's giving a keynote speech at Discovery World in Milwaukee tomorrow on a clean energy event hosted by WIS Politics and WIS Business. So what are some of the other things with this law about, one of the things that mentioned with this is, it's going to change how we heat and cool our homes in a lot of ways. What are some of the impacts that this can have, just on everyday folks and in their homes?
Yeah, well, I mean, the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act, I believe the number is something, I don't want to say the number wrong, but there's thousands of dollars in incentives that homeowners can take advantage of for energy retrofits, for things like heat pumps, Of course, electric vehicles, which have an interesting sort of, in some cases, an interesting use case to actually attach and serve as a backup power source for homes. All of these are incentivized by the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, it's cold here today, or colder than where I came from. I'd be looking into how to take advantage of these things, because they, both they're tax incentives that you can take advantage of from the federal government, but they also can lower your energy costs. And that's something that the folks who wrote this legislation are quite proud of, that it also can help everyday people cut their heating and energy costs.
Yeah, this is something I'm, personally interested in, because I'm a homeowner in an old house on the west side of Milwaukee that is not the most energy efficient place to live. Got some old windows, got some old HVAC type stuff in the house. So I think, there's a lot of, and then there's a lot of old housing stock in the state of Wisconsin. So I think, any type of energy efficient improvement opportunities, I think, is going to affect a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, if you're a homeowner, it should affect you. I mean, this is something you should be taking a look at, no question.
Yeah, and I think I will be. I think I need to be learning more about what exactly this can offer us homeowners across Wisconsin, and just the larger big picture of kind of how this very big, important, snarly law is going to impact people at the ground level. So we're coming up close to a break here. Justin, you are going to stick with us for another segment. If you have any questions about maybe how this law could impact you, feel free to give us a call. Give us a call at 844-967-2789. Again, that's 844-967-2789. Justin Warland from Time Magazine is going to be joining us for one more segment after the break here. Again, I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, and we will be right back after the break. Stick with us.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, who is off today, but she's got some pretty exciting stuff going on today. She's got her content being shared and promoted by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, so that's pretty cool. Go check that out over on the As Goes Wisconsin Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and all the different places you find Kristen's work over the course of the week. We are joined for this segment by Justin Warland, who is a journalist at Time Magazine, and he is also giving a keynote speech tomorrow, I believe, at Discovery World in Milwaukee, talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and clean energy, climate change, all sorts of issues wrapped up in that big bill. So this next segment, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the implementation of that. So that bill got passed last year. And, as the process, these processes take a while. So what happens next as this begins to be implemented, on a federal level, on a state level, what should people be paying attention to as this big, important piece of legislation begins to become a reality?
Yeah, well, there's a lot, right? So the Inflation Reduction Act, is implemented through a range of different federal agencies. It requires, uptake from the private sector, state participation. So it really, the thing that you look for first is to see how agencies are crafting the rules, because Congress gives sort of a wide berth, with particulars that need to be defined by agencies. So a lot of that is happening in places like the Treasury Department, happening in places like the Department of Energy, EPA, et cetera. I think, from an average, from a consumer perspective, a lot of those rules are being crafted, as I said, at the Treasury Department. So rules about what kind of tax incentives, what tax incentives look like. We've gotten some of the sort of first drafts of that, and we're going to continue to see more come down the pike. As I said, part of this is, the private sector, in some cases, has to take advantage of the tax incentives, things like clean energy tax incentives, for sort of utility scale renewables, or also, there are new technologies like hydrogen, et cetera, that the private sector has to buy into. There are some programs that states will, participate in. This is actually from the bipartisan infrastructure law, but that kind of gets looped in with the Inflation Reduction Act. There's, say every state has submitted plans for how they're going to build an electric vehicle network, charging network in their state, and how they can get federal funds from that. So it takes a lot of different players to kind of come together and turn this thing into something that achieves its objectives.
Yeah. To what extent is this kind of following the same process that we saw play out with the bipartisan infrastructure law?
Yeah, it's similar in many ways and different in other ways. I mean, I think the big difference is the emphasis on the private sector and private sector uptake. I mean, this is less about building roads and bridges, charging networks, et cetera, things that the government builds, and I think largely, almost entirely, about things that the private sector will build. So part of that is, if there's a consumer incentive, if there's a, if the government's going to pay for solar panels on your roof or for, energy efficient housing, clearly the private sector is going to provide that because the incentive is there. Part of it is, though, even with things like hydrogen, as I alluded to, or some of these other technologies, there still has to be, the private sector has to believe they can make money off of it, even with these incentives. So I would say that's sort of a difference. Having said that, the two are designed to work together, right? So the bipartisan infrastructure law provides funding to upgrade the grid. That's really critical if you're going to build out clean energy, which is something that the private sector would build. So the two work together, but they're also different.
Yeah, and we've got a big climate change issue to tackle in this country going forward, and we have not really had the infrastructure in place to be able to do that, and this kind of allows that opportunity, in a really meaningful way. And we're seeing some of those effects. We're seeing some of those changes. And people don't always think of Wisconsin as a place that is going to be necessarily impacted greatly by climate change. Just look at the recent winter that we've had, though. We've had a very mild winter. Great Lakes, we're going to get a lot more rain, precipitation going forward. So we're going to be impacted by this in a lot of ways, but also just economically to address some of these issues and find, better energy solutions going forward. And this bill, opens up some opportunities for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a sort of climate perspective, I think it's important to think, okay, I was on a panel with the Governor Walz of Minnesota last week, and he was talking about how Duluth was named the safest place to be, in a climate apocalypse. And I don't want to overemphasize that Wisconsin is probably not going to be, turned into a flooded place like Florida. But at the same time, like, as you said, there are impacts for agriculture, and you don't want to miss the sort of bigger picture, which is that the world is changing. Industry is changing. There are going to be all sorts of things like migration that changes. So no place is an island, right? And Wisconsin will be affected. Having said that, it's also a really good opportunity, as we were saying earlier. It's an opportunity for new industry. It's an opportunity to really prepare for this 21st century economy.
Justin Warland, journalist from Time Magazine, is going to be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at Discovery World in Milwaukee in an event presented by WIS Politics and WIS Business. Really interesting stuff. I'm fascinated to see kind of how this is this really once the rubber meets the road. I think that's when things get interesting with a lot of these big bills like that. So I'm interested to see kind of what happens going forward. So Justin, thank you so much for joining us. I encourage people to check out your keynote speech tomorrow in Milwaukee if they have the opportunity. And when we get back from the break after this, we're going to be joined by Patty Vasquez, who's going to be talking to us about our neighbors to the south in Illinois and about the mayor's race in Chicago. So stick with us for that one. Justin, thank you again for joining us. But great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host for today. We've made it to the last half hour of the show, and I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, the host and producer of Driving It Home on WCPT 820 AM, and a lifelong Chicagoan, Patty Vasquez. Thank you so much for joining the show.
I am so excited. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful because you're usually my guest.
So we're switching things up for today because I am a regular guest on your show, where you have me join the show every Wednesday on Driving It Home to talk about all the craziness that is happening in Wisconsin politics. So now I'm turning the tables on you because we gotta bring you on here so we can talk about all the craziness that's happening in Chicago politics. So before we jump into the conversation here, we have been kind of focusing on mayoral elections throughout the show. So in the first hour of the show, we had Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's involved with local politics in Green Bay. She was telling us about the mayoral election in Green Bay. We were joined by Scott Gordon of Tone Madison. He was telling us about the mayoral election happening in Madison. We've also got a mayoral election happening south of the border. Yep. In Chicago. And I think it's really important for us in Wisconsin to be paying attention to this election as well, because it is an important race for our just a neighboring state. It is an important race, I think, for the whole Midwest, because I think Chicago is such an important piece of our regional economy for so many things. So what's and with the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, I've been focusing so much on that I haven't had a whole lot of time to pay a lot of attention to what's happening in the race for mayor of Chicago. So what's going on down there?
Well, in relation to the fact that, how it affects Wisconsin, I mean, this is also a big labor race because Paul Vallis, wherever he has gone, has worked to diminish the rights of teachers, the ability to bargain and have access to representation. I mean, in Philadelphia, in New Orleans, pretty much everywhere he's gone, he has opened more charter schools. In New Orleans, after Katrina, he went in, did his work, and it's almost entirely charter schools. I don't think people realize this. It's almost entirely charter schools in New Orleans right now. And during the pandemic, Paul Vallis talked a lot about how we've got to break the contract. If they're not going to go back into the schools, you know, we've got to make sure that our teachers aren't getting homeschooled. He connected a lot of what was happening during the pandemic with violence in Chicago to kids not being in school. And it was rough. It's pretty rough. And then you have Brandon Johnson, who is a former Chicago public teacher, a Cook County commissioner. He has been on the record after George Floyd is saying, you know, we need to defund the police. He's trying to figure out that space now. So you really have kind of the two ends of the political spectrum in Chicago. We have a lot of conservatives here, especially in the neighborhoods like where I live, where there's a lot of cops and firefighters. And I also live near a lot of teachers. So I think it really reflects, where we are as a city right now. We are bumping heads with each other, what it means to have safe streets, what it means to have quality and free education. So it's kind of the perfect battle in many ways. And I'm really concerned about the direction we're going in.
Yeah, it's an interesting race. Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson emerged from this primary. So you have Lori Lightfoot, the incumbent mayor, who did not make the runoff, did not make the final ballot. So she will be a one-term right. mayor. Essentially making it an open race for mayor of Chicago. And you have kind of the two candidates, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, who are kind of farthest apart on the political yeah. spectrum among the candidates that were running. So you had Lori Lightfoot, you had Congressman Chuy Garcia, who yeah. both came up short. I was kind of surprised that Garcia, just having a little bit of national profile, that he didn't do as well as he did. But you have these two candidates, probably the farthest apart of any of the two candidates running in the primary, and you have a real contrast on the ballot. On April 4th, the same day we're going to be voting here in Wisconsin as well.
See, this is why you're an excellent guest, because when I talk to you, you give all that background and the context, whereas I'm in it every day and I'm like, here's where Vallis is and here's where Brandon Johnson is. But, you know, so there were nine candidates in our it was our general election. So we don't do primaries. And here is a little bit of background. After Harold Washington became the first black mayor of Chicago, the conservative Democrats in Chicago looked to the Dixiecrats and were like, how do they do it down there in order to preserve this sort of more conservative element? So they eliminated primaries. There is no, you know, Democrat running against a Republican anymore. You pretty much everyone says they're a Democrat in order to even compete. And that's how we end up with the general. And then if someone is not able to win it outright with 50 plus one, we end up with a runoff. And this is the second runoff since 2015. So back to Chuy Garcia, who did run against Rahm Emanuel in 2015, forced him into a runoff. And really, that was that song you played at the beginning about there was an election and nobody showed up. It hovered around the low 20% of people that showed up and reelected Rahm Emanuel. The problem with Chuy Garcia's campaign was that he came in so late. I mean, after petitions were already circulating, I think there might have only been 3 weeks left. Vallis had announced a year ago, I think in April of 22. Brandon Johnson announced in the fall after that. So it was, and he had already locked up. Brandon Johnson locked up the support of CTU, which is one of the most powerful unions in the city. Paul Vallis was on his way to locking up FOP. And here's the thing about Vallis was that he has, and he talks a lot about this, he brags about his relationships with the police department. He says, you know, I negotiated their contract. The police department did not have contract for over, I want to say, maybe 3 years. It was quite a long time. They did not have a contract at the end of Rahm Emanuel's term and going into Lori Lightfoot's. And he says, I did it for free. Did you? Did you do it for free when you then get the endorsement and the full support of the Chicago Police Department? That doesn't seem like it's free to me.
Interesting. Very interesting. Maybe a little bit of quid pro quo going on there. Is that what you're suggesting? I don't know.
Yeah, 1,000% quid
yeah.
pro quo. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. So we're talking to Patty Vasquez about the race for mayor of Chicago. I know this show is called As Goes Wisconsin, but we are paying attention to what's going on with our neighbors in Chicago, because we want there to be a thriving, growing Chicago as well. And I think, you know, you mentioned something at the outset that there are, you know, Chicago always thought of as a very Democratic city. And it, of course, is. But there, you know, just based on the numbers of how many people live in the city of Chicago, you're going to have a lot of conservatives there. You're going to have a lot of, you know, Republican aligned voters. And I think about this with Milwaukee as well, because, you know, Milwaukee is so much bigger than every other city in the state that the number one, you know, the most Trump votes for any municipality in Wisconsin came from Milwaukee. And just because it's 25%, you know, 25% of the city is going to vote Republican, that's still a huge chunk of the city. So, you know, we had a situation with our mayoral election a year ago in Milwaukee where, you know, we had a primary and basically the Republican candidate, who's now a state representative, Republican state representative working in Madison, Bob Donovan, he's basically a Republican. So he got about 25% of the vote once we finally got past the primary, and Cavalier Johnson got that kind of a huge number, more than 70% of the vote to win a full term as mayor. So is that a similar dynamic to what's happening in Chicago? Are there, you know, is the expectation that a lot of the more, you know, progressive, liberally aligned candidates are going to rally behind Brandon Johnson, or are people kind of split there depending on kind of who they had been supporting?
That is something that has been concerning me for the last couple of weeks. I talked to a Democrat that I've been working with for over a decade. I advocate for families that have an individual in their family with disabilities. And I don't want to name their name because I was very disappointed when they told me that they would be voting for Vallis. So Vallis seems to be drawing on Republicans, 1,000% there. I'm going to say that I should stop saying that because nothing is 1,000, but he is drawing on Republican support. And I'm not just saying that. He's getting all kinds of attention on Fox News. Conservatives across the country, talk show hosts are definitely salivating at the idea of a very conservative, I guess he's saying he's a Democrat, taking over Chicago, a pro-police, anti-teacher, teachers union candidate taking over the city. And the thing that I watch, and so I ran for office in 2020. So I have a somewhat of a handle on my neighborhood. I am a progressive, but I also grew up around a lot of cops and firefighters, and they kind of, many of them supported me. The candidate who did win was even more progressive than I am, at least on paper. So I have, and then we also, there was a cop in the race. So in a three-way race, I got 38% of the vote. And the reason I mention that is because I have an idea of what voter turnout can be like. And that was right when the pandemic was starting. In this general election, 42% of my ward showed up. And most of them, the majority of them voted for Paul Vallis. I think it was like 75% voted for Paul Vallis. Like Lori Lightfoot got 5.7%. Brandon maybe got like 7%, somewhere in those numbers. And that's unsettling. The wards north of me and a little bit west of me came out in similar numbers, 45%, when the city turnout was like 36%. So that tells you that there's a higher turnout. There was a lot of motivation to vote against Lori Lightfoot. There was a lot of motivation to vote for Paul Vallis. So it's not just a vote against somebody, but they had someone that they want to get in there. And you can see it with all the signs, like our alderman, also very conservative, basically had Trump rallies in front of the police station a couple of years ago. So, and another thing, that's as far as conservatives in my community, 52% in 2016 for Trump, 50 in Chicago.
In Chicago.
And if you folded the map with the south side of Chicago with Mount Greenwood, which also has a lot of cops and firefighters, similar numbers. And these are, and another thing is to remember that we are one of the most segregated cities in the country. So you have predominantly white. My neighborhood, when I went door knocking as a candidate, my husband could hear me because I had a Bluetooth in just to have someone like with me. And he could hear in the tone of my voice, he would say, "Do not hug that black person," because there are so few. My tone of voice would be like, "Hey, I'm so happy you're here. It must be so hard." Because there were only six. There were six from September through March. I only had six black people answer the door in my neighborhood. That's it. So that's going to play a big part of this. Racism is going to play a part in this. Conservatism in my neighborhood is going to play a big part. Public safety. And by public safety, that's a dog whistle a lot of times for, the black people are causing a lot of crime.
Yeah.
Really, in this neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just as current conservatives across the country like to talk about Chicago, conservatives in no matter where your community, they're going to in Wisconsin, always scapegoating Milwaukee. We know with a lot of these coded terms,
yes,
that our friends on some of the other talk radio stations in the region here like to use for some of the problems that Milwaukee's facing. I imagine a fairly similar dynamic,
yeah,
happening in Chicago. We're talking to Patty Vasquez, who is the host of Driving at Home on Driving at Home on WCPT 820 AM, lifelong Chicagoan. She's going to be joining us for one more segment here. So after the break, we're going to be continuing to talk about what's going on in the Chicago mayor's race. Is the top issue in the race their relationship with Wisconsin and Milwaukee? Has that come up at all?
Look, abortion has come up. So
sure.
It's kind of part of the conversation.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of the conversation. Maybe some more Wisconsin residents moving to Chicago if things go a certain way, if things go sideways.
That's why we're trying to organize Fibs for Wisconsin and help Janet Protasiewicz win.
That's right. Well, see, I've been pretty good so far, not having our producer run over to the beep button. So I'm not gonna make him work any harder than he has to with talking about the fibs or the fish or the fish tabs. If anyone knows what a fish tab is, call in the show, because I think that's a fun one. So we're gonna be continuing to talk with Patty after the break here. About the race for mayor in Chicago between Paul Vallas and Brandon Johnson. Fascinating race happening just across the border in Wisconsin. How much time we got before the break here, Calvin? Just one more minute. Okay. I have to imagine one other thing that Chicagoans must be paying attention to happening in Wisconsin right now is whether Aaron Rodgers is going to be in the division going next year. So that's something that we've been monitoring on the show today as well, because this could, you know, anything could happen at any time with Aaron Rodgers potentially getting traded to the Jets. I have to imagine the Chicago fans are ready to see him go.
Well, you know, we're going to be the Arlington Heights Bears soon. So we're not really, I'm not as invested as I used to be. So I wish you the best.
Yeah, that's right. The Arlington Heights Bears against the, against Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. Boy, that's going to be a little weird. All right. Well, stick with us. We're going to be continuing this conversation after the break. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in as your guest host today on As Goes Wisconsin. Kristen is off, but you can find Kristen's content on Instagram, where she's been promoted by Julia Louis-Dreyfus today. That's pretty fun. So stick with us. We're going to keep talking after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host today. If you're unfamiliar with me and my work, I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. I'm also a regular contributor to Heartland Signal and a regular guest on WCPT 820 with Patty Vasquez, who is our guest here today. She hosts the Driving at Home radio show in Chicago, and I go on her show every week to talk about their crazy neighbors to the north and whatever wild insanity that Wisconsin Republicans are bringing to the news cycle on elections and whatever else. We've been talking a lot about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race lately. So I decided we should turn the tables a little bit today with me guest hosting the show and have Patty join us so she can tell us about our goofy neighbors to the south and about what's going on with their race for mayor, because they have an election the same day that we do. Again, reminder, April 4th, less than 3 weeks away. Early voting, early absentee, in-person absentee voting, less than a week away, starts in the state of Wisconsin. So be ready to vote and be ready to flip that Wisconsin Supreme Court. But Patty is telling us a little bit about what's been happening, about the race for mayor in Chicago. So what have been some of the big things happening lately? And you said you wanted to talk a little bit about what was going on with the impact of social media on this race. So what's going on here?
Sure. So Paul Vallas began, let me put it this way. He ran in 2019. So he was in that big race. We had 11 candidates. And, you know, this is something that, again, with ranked choice voting, we're talking a lot about that in Illinois now. We're looking at that as a possibility in our state legislature. Lori Lightfoot made it out of that first round in the general election with about 17% of the vote. Tony Preckwinkle, who was the other runoff candidate, had about 16%. So nobody had anywhere near a majority. I contend that when you have too many choices, people choose nothing. I think suppressed the voter turnout. But the day after that election, I mean, I'm not saying like that, I don't have the exact date, but really quite quickly, Paul Vallas started to be a part of a lot of neighborhood groups. We're just starting to talk about this on my show where people are calling in. They're like, yeah, I remember him being on my neighborhood chats. So like anytime there was violence, he was amplifying that in neighborhood groups and how the police are being handcuffed and hamstringed and we're not letting them do their jobs. He was courting the police support the minute he lost in 2019. And we see that. And he also started speaking at conferences and events that were held by a group called Awake Illinois, which is one of these parents' choice, parents' freedoms groups.
And not woke Illinois, just to be awake.
Awake.
Yes.
No, it's awake. Okay. It's that sort of sarcastic, well, if you're woke, we're awake.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're a book banning group. They're an anti-trans group. They call the governor a groomer. They're very aggressive. They have gained a lot of momentum. They were very involved in the gubernatorial race, trying to elect Darren Bailey, who I don't know if you remember, but after the Highland Park shooting, the 4th of July parade where several people lost their lives and a young boy had his spinal cord severed. And his name is Cooper. And I had the, experience of working with Cooper a little bit because my son and he were in the hospital at the same time. Beautiful little boy whose life has been altered so dramatically and catastrophically, and of course lives that were lost, and just the trauma of it all. And within less than, I think, 2 hours, Darren Bailey appeared with his campaign signs and a whole group of people. You know, that was very tragic. Now it's time to celebrate. Like, that's the kind of tone, because they didn't want to talk anything about gun violence. They didn't want that to be the conversation. And Awake Illinois was very involved in holding fundraisers, elevating him. And Paul Vallis appeared at some, like, not just appeared, he was on their promotions as a speaker for school choice, for what kids should be taught about public safety. And so all of that is out there. And this is the maddening part of any race, right? Where you're like, but you just, like, we talked about this with Ron Johnson, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can say the craziest things and he's like, that's not what I meant. Or, you know, that's just, that was then, or a lie is not a lie kind of stuff. And so that's what we're seeing with Paul Vallis. Now, Brandon Johnson has some of the language that can be divisive, you know, with defund the police. And And, you know, there's a misunderstanding of what that push was for. We have programs in Illinois now in Chicago where we do send out trauma responders, social workers that go out for domestic violence situations, mental health situations. And that was, you know, unfortunately, the language of defund the police was not reallocate or, you know, where our priorities are, which would also keep police safe. If we are approaching these situations with an impactful intention, then we are keeping them safe as well. But Paul Vallis has been, I would say it's very much in the conservative right-wing vein of driving a message home. And he was very deliberate and precise with it for over 3 years. And now we're seeing the outcome of that.
And from what I understand, he's more or less the front runner in this race, right? He's the favorite to win. Or I mean, I hesitate to, you know, make any mm-hmm. characterizations of a race that I'm not particularly familiar with.
For those who can't see us, I'm massaging I clench my jaw so much. I am hopeful that the grassroots efforts all over the city of Chicago will, first of all, we need voter turnout. We need to find voters who aren't registered. We need to get young people involved, because that was the lowest turnout that I've seen in a long time. 18 to 24 year olds, I think it hovered around less than 10% wow. for voter turnout amongst young people. I think that they're engaged on the national level, but in Chicago, it's very low numbers. So that's, yeah, the polling seems to be within 5% of each other, mm. and it goes back and forth as to who's in the lead. So mm-hmm. it's close. And that's a 14% undecided in most cases.
So beyond just the divisive comments and whatever mischaracterization of pushes for criminal justice reform that came out of 2020, what are some of the other things that we should know about Brandon Johnson?
Yes. Yeah, that's, you know, I'm so bad. Like, the terror in my heart, you can hear, because I'm like, and that's a really good point that you bring up, because going after the other candidates, conservatism doesn't necessarily, you know, motivate people. Brandon Johnson has been a community activist. He has been a Cook County commissioner. He knows how to work budgets. He knows how to work with people. He is so well versed on what it means to make sure that kids have a quality education. He is invested in our public transportation. We have been struggling since the pandemic to get ridership up and to have a strong path forward. We, you know, he has a vision for connecting people who are unhoused, because we have a lot of folks who are living at the bus stations, at the train stations, on the trains, and he wants to connect those people with services that will help them out of those situations. I think that he has a vision that, you know, is more pedestrian centric in the sense that obviously we're all car brained, but, you know, he in that sense of, you know, public safety isn't just crime. It's also making sure that people don't get hit by a car. Sorry.
Thanks for all of that, Patty. I know. It's a very exciting race that you have in Chicago for the race for mayor. We will be watching that from here. Hey, that's our show. Thank you for tuning in to As Goes Wisconsin. I've been your host, Dan Schaefer. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.